If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people with credit card debt. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, the first step is yours. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-463-1749. 800-463-1749. That's 800-463-1749. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services or by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM-19, Oregon DM-80031. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission. License number DC-32.
The Financial Exchange, weekdays 10 to noon, 1120 a.m. WBNW.
The following program is wholly sponsored and produced by Stu Taylor on Business, which is responsible for its content. The opinions and information provided on today's show are those of the guests and or their respective companies and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of this station. It is strongly recommended that all listeners conduct their own due diligence on all companies mentioned and or seek out the advice and counsel of a financial professional. The guests on this show may pay a fee to appear on the show and are not affiliated with the show in any manner. This is Stu Taylor on Business. Now, Stu Taylor.
All right, welcome. Hoping you're all well today as we proceed with I think another great show for you, and we'll open with an important subject. I'd like to jump into important subjects right away. Not that they don't all have a certain importance or essence, but this one does. Joining us is Stephen M. Bauman. It's spelled B-A-U-M-A-N-N. That's Stephen M. Bauman. He is the author of Be My Friend, A Parent and Child's Guide for Making Quality Friendship Choices. It is published by Zulon Press. You can go to zulonpress.com, barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com, or you can always Google Stephen M. Bauman and the name of the book, which is Be My Friend. And when we talk about parent-child relationships, I really don't know too many more important subjects, so let's get right to it. And welcome, Stephen, to the show. It's nice to have you on. Just a little bit about your background and what's so special about this book.
Well, Stu, thank you so much for having me on here today. I'm excited to share what's been on my heart for a number of years and observations about friendship building and how it's impacted, obviously, my own life and observations working with kids. I've been a school teacher, a substitute teacher, which was probably the most eye-opening, and many other aspects of working with kids. And my wife and I, we volunteer. And so it's just been an outgrowth of those observations.
And
I just want to thank some very special people in my life, because if I fail to do this, I will have failed. My mom, who's made this thing possible, Nancy Verdon, she's the expert of friendship making and building, and so I've just learned so much from her and owe everything. My mother-in-law, Judy, she pestered me on this book until it happened, and if it weren't for that pestering, I don't think I would ever have done it. And my stepmom, Linda, she's just been an encouragement. Of course, my dad. They have just been key people. And finally, and not least, my wife, Jenny, and my best friend. So
right, I want to get right to the book because we only have limited time here.
Sure.
And if you could tell me the distinguishing characteristics, what kind of sets this book apart? What was the motivation for writing it?
Well, this book really is about not just how to make friends, but it's the process of making quality friends. Parents make two mistakes, I believe. One is they micromanage. They are on top of their kids so that they can't make a bad decision, fearful of the bad influences of friends all over the place. And so kids never learn to discern nor how to proceed in making friends. That would be the first mistake. And then when it comes to, in high school and so forth, they rebel and choose every wrong friend just to spite their parents. The other mistake is that they just throw their hands in the air and say, well, I can't do anything with my kids, so let them make their own decisions. And we don't do that with when it comes to poison and food. We'd never say, well, let my kid just figure it out on their own. We would hide, obviously, any rat poison or things that could harm our kids and give them the right. And yet we don't do what I think is the third and best option, is to teach kids how to make the right choices and give them discernment capabilities. So that's really the crux of the book, is giving parents and kids a tool to take the me versus them, the parent versus child, and make it parent and child working together to formulate and build a group of friends that can hopefully last a lifetime and that will build them up and support them in their life.
And you can't have a tyrannical atmosphere at home, and you can't, on the other hand, leave everything entirely up to the kids to figure out where to go. So does this become a collaborative process between the parent and the child in order to get him or her on the right course?
It certainly does, and I think you've touched on it. It's working together. Children at age 2, 3, we have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. They are learning skills, but they're in the process. And to make them figure it out on their own or to overreact and overwork it is also a mistake. And so working together as kids and parents grow together and develop friendships, I think that's the key. And this book, Be My Friend, really is a working process and something that can be functionally workable, that they can combine those efforts together between parent and child.
Stephen M. Baum, and the book is Be My Friend, a Parent and Child's Guide for Making Quality Friendship Choices, publisher Zulon, that's spelled X-U-L-O-N. Stephen, I think how difficult, maybe how more difficult it is than ever in past generations. I know every generation says it, but with the influx and the lowering of the bar in terms of morals, the influx of drugs in our society, single parents, it's more and more and more difficult. And you combine that with the influence of infatuation, how kids are infatuated with other kids and want to form an alliance, or quite frankly, peer pressure from other kids. How do you suggest they combat those destructive forces?
Well, there are a number of ways. Parents need to be involved with their kids. I mean, that's obvious. But it's harder to do it than to say it. It means intentionally putting aside the television set. It means for both parent and child, it means spending that time when, oh, I'm tired, I've had a full day, I just can't do it. I come home, and last thing I want to do is deal with my kids who've been whining, and I just want to disappear. But that's where the parent cannot abdicate the responsibility. They have to be involved, and they have to take intentional effort to spend time with their kids. And, you know, I compare it to a playground. Every single child, every single person, every single relationship that a person ever has in their entire lifetime, imagine everybody in that giant playground, thousands of people, and your child has to navigate every single person in relationship. Who's going to be a friend? Who's going to be an enemy? And what are those people going to be like? Are they going to be conductors when they grow up, salesmen, musicians, drug addicts, involved in horrible activity, even the unthinkable of bringing a semi-automatic into a classroom? This is becoming more commonplace and sickeningly so. And how do we help our children amongst that giant playground that I bring up here as an illustration? How are we going to help our kids make those wise choices for kids that will be there possibly for a lifetime as a friend?
How much do you have the infiltration of religious education, you can call it spiritual too, value-based? How do you combine the religious component with the pragmatism?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I think a lot of the listeners that will say, well, Christianity, it's a negative term. And they think of the Inquisition and Crusades, and they think of all these negative things, and even people that have burned them. And I've been burned, too. I've been hurt by people that, you know, I could blame God for it. I could blame Christianity for it. But I think what we have to do is, who is the person that started it all, and revisiting who Jesus was? And this person of Jesus, he wasn't about burning his neighbor. He wasn't about putting a knife in the back or gossiping or being disloyal and unloving. He was all the things about even forgiveness. psychologists today are telling us we need to learn to forgive. There's healing properties in that. Well, Jesus taught that 2,000 years ago. So the person of Jesus, I think, is an excellent role model. And if we had friends that were loving and caring and didn't hold grudges, I mean, what kind of friends would we have be today? We'd be very rich people. So I think religion, while you know, I want to throw out the negativity of that, I do want to focus on the person of Jesus. And I am a Christian. I write from a Christian perspective. But I think there's even an atheist can gain a lot of value in understanding that role and in modeling, following his model.
Just in closing here, we have less than a minute. What in the area of family and relationships, what distinguishes this book from others?
Well, it gives a couple of comparisons. Kids can use and parents can use the 12 boats. I've compared relationships in boats, like a tugboat is a servant-hearted person. I have a friend, Vicky, that over the years, just servant-hearted and I don't say that in a bad way, but in a way that she'd just listen and care and I could pour out some of my frustrations with her. And a friend of mine who I compared to a sailboat, you know, just loved the outdoors. He helped bring me into a whole new group of friends. And friends like this who have just made a difference in my life, I compare to boats. And so kids and parents can take the 12 boats that are in the book and plot their personalities in a graph. And then the priorities of Jesus, the inner ring, the close ring, and then the next ring, the outer ring, and then the exterior ring. Those were his disciples. And when you put those two graphs together, it looks like a dartboard.
All right, on that note, I want to finish the sentence. Be my friend, a parent and child's guide for making quality friendship choices. Stephen M. Bauman, and that's published by Zulon Press. Thanks for this valuable information for us.
The safety oath. Repeat after me. I will safely bring safety to my facility and keep it safe. I will safely keep my people safe. I will put safety first in everything I do, and I will safely do so with Grainger. When you think safety, think Grainger. Grainger's got over 100,000 safety products to help keep our facility safe and our people safer. When it comes to safety, Grainger's got your back. Call clickgrainger.com/safety or stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Are you married? Do you and your husband both have term life insurance? If you both don't, you should. You have a lot to protect. Call now, get a free quote for your husband, and while you're at it, get a quote for yourself too, because you both need term life insurance. Call now. 800-915-9658. 800-915-9658. 800-915-9658. Rates are at all-time lows. We'll shop over 30 top-rated companies to get you the best possible rates. Term life insurance, it's the perfect way to protect the quality of your family's lifestyle. You and your husband both need term life insurance, so call now for a free quote for the both of you. 800-915-9658. 800-915-9658. 800-915-9658.
U2 America TV, featuring original live programs created with you in mind. Engage with shows through social media and the U2 America app. America Trends with Dr. Gina covers the trending topics of the day and allows viewers to interact with the show. Sully's Biz Brew is business with a barroom slant, delivered with a twist. Visit U2America.com to find a channel near you. U2 America, red, white, and you.
This is an important message to all listeners. If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes to the IRS, the tax pros at OIC Tax want to help you. OIC Tax is dedicated to helping taxpayers just like you with their IRS problems.
I owed a lot of money to the IRS. I was working long hours and weekends just to make ends meet. To make matters worse, the IRS was about to garnish my wages, and I needed to file several years of back tax returns. Then I called the tax professionals at OIC Tax. They stopped the IRS from garnishing my wages. They even placed my account into the IRS's financial hardship program so I don't have to make any payments to the IRS. That's right, no payments to the IRS while I'm in this program.
Call OIC Tax today to see if you qualify for the IRS's financial hardship program. Call 800-790-5988. meet. Call now and mention you heard this radio commercial and receive 10% off their already low fees. 800-790-5988. That number, 800-790-5988. Call now, 800-790-5988.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370, 800-605-5370, call 800-605-5370.
BizTalkRadio.com.
The Legal Exchange, Saturdays 1 to 2 p.m., a.m. 1120, WBNW.
This is Joe Kernan from CNBC Squawk Box. Just did an interview with Stu Taylor. Stu is helping keep America great.
All right, we return, and joining us right now on a subject that also has significance religious-wise, and joining us is Joan T. Broussard. I want to spell the last name if you need to Google her. It's B-R-O-U-S-S-A-R-D. The book is The Innkeeper's Wife, A Friendship Like No Other. It's published by Tate Publishing. You can go to Tate Publishing. TateBooks.com, TatePublishing.com, Amazon.com, and BarnesandNoble.com. And I welcome you to the show. It's great to have you with us, Joan.
Well, thank you, Stu. It's great to be with you today.
The book, a little about your background, why you wrote it, and what it's about.
Well, why I wrote it, I wanted to share an experience in prayer that can lead to a book of this type. I went on a 8-day silent retreat in Spain about five or six years ago and had an experience during a prayer method called imaginative contemplation, where you put yourself in the scene of a scripture story as either one of the characters, one of the people there, or as an observer. And in this instance, I was contemplating and reflecting on the nativity of Jesus, and imagined Joseph and Mary coming to the inn, asking for a room and being told they didn't have a room, they just had a stable. And in this experience, I heard that innkeeper's wife scold him really bad for sending that obviously pregnant woman to the stable. So after she fusses him really good, she runs up to the stable and befriends that young woman and ends up being midwife to her that night.
How much research did you do for the book, and where did you derive most of the content from?
The content was really my own, not much research other than long years of journeying through the spiritual life and just becoming Christian, Catholic specifically, and just knowing the life of Jesus in my own faith walk. You know, we don't know a whole lot. Well, we don't know anything really about the adolescent years of Jesus. So from a literary standpoint, you can kind of make up anything you want. And that's what I did. I wanted to give some insight to who the young person of Jesus and his early years. And he ended up, some circumstances arose, and this character, her name is Gertrude, the innkeeper's wife, ended up following that holy family all the way to Egypt and lived with them, and the story culminates actually at the cross, at the crucifixion of Jesus. She ends up being a lifelong friend of Mary and Joseph, and has an experience of living with this family. It ended up being a pretty remarkable story that kind of mirrors my own faith journey. You know, you want to come and accept Jesus in your life at some point, and sometimes it's hard because you want to stay, you know, in your own, what you think is your own controlling existence, but it's really not. She had quite an experience living with them. You know, we know from Scripture that they went in. Jesus' first miracle was that wedding at Cana, where he turned the wine and the water into wine. Well, in my story, the people who were holding the wedding were actually Gertrude's cousins. So I used Scripture, what we know, you know, from Scripture, and kind of put a little fictional slant on things to create some interest and make the make Mary and Joseph and Jesus and Gertrude, you know, come a little more alive, have some skin on them so you can relate.
Joan, are there any other messages to this book, like one, two, three, I'd like people to get this out of it or that out of it other than what you said?
Okay. Well, what I'd like people to get out of it is it comes to trusting Jesus to be who he says he is. And if we just have a small amount of faith, he'll give us the grace to get through whatever life throws at us. Her big motto in life was, and so is mine, is to just stand faithful amid all things that happen to us in life. And she was known to pray big, I like to say. People have asked me, what does pray big mean? And my definition for it is not just some casual prayers that you throw, you know, throw around and hope it get, it reaches his ears, but to pray with all your heart, pray with your core, pray with meaning and intensity and fervor. You know, it's like, don't just pray casually, pray big, pray what you mean and, you know, mean what you pray to a real God. Yeah.
Gina, what have been people's reactions after having read the book? I'm very curious to know that.
Thank you for asking that. The reaction I've been getting from nearly everyone is how they can relate to this character, Gertrude. They see themselves in her. Initially, when you first meet her in the book, she's pretty rough. She kind of scolds that innkeeper husband of hers really strong, has a strong mouth, a big voice, kind of hot-tempered, and is really angry when she sees injustice. But living with Mary and following their example taught her to kind of calm that down a little bit and have some faith and be more loving as a first reaction to being more, you know, too intense and wanting to, eat you up before understanding where you might be coming from. So the reaction has been people relate to her and her conversion story that, you know, plays out throughout the book.
What was the most difficult part of writing this book, or was there no difficulty?
Actually, there wasn't. It wasn't hard to write. I've been working and thinking about living with this character for about 8 years, I suppose. The part of the Last Supper and leading up to the Passion of Christ was actually as the most difficult part, because you have to realize what, you know, our participation in that as Christians. But it actually wasn't very hard to write. It actually almost wrote itself. I just asked Gertrude, so what are you going to do, you know, for the Last Supper? And she actually, in the story, goes and helps set the table for the Last Supper. And then later, when Jesus is crucified, and as Christians, we know he was resurrected. But before he ascended to heaven, he appeared to the apostles. Well, in my book, he also appeared to Gertrude. And she had a chance to ask him some of the questions we'd all want to ask him. So what's the deal with that supper you had? What's that all about? What was the point of that? And, you know, she asked him some things, you know, with the kind of voice, talk before you think kind of attitude she had. And asked him some of the questions we'd all want to know.
All right. On that note, thank you for very detailed analysis of the book, The Innkeeper's Wife, A Friendship Like No Other, written by Joan T. Broussard and published by Tate Publishing. It's been a pleasure having you on, Joan.
Thank you, Stu. Appreciate having time with you this morning.
All right. We're going to take a break and come back with another great guest, Jonah Berger. Invisible Influence, the Hidden Force.
Summer fun?
Welcome to Staples.
Staples guy, I need to get a grip on my company's spending.
Staples has low prices every day.
So I won't overspend?
Nope. With our price match guarantee, you can always get the lowest price on everything for your office.
Everything?
Everything.
The lowest prices on ink, paper, coffee, ink, folders, notepads, ink, sticky notes, ink, trash pads, ink, binders, and ink?
Need some ink?
A little bit, yeah.
Trust Staples for low prices every day. Staples. Make more happen.
Price match good at checkout for items from retailers operating online in retail stores or products sold and shipped by Amazon. See store at staples.com for details.
The safety oath. Repeat after me. I will safely bring safety to my facility and keep it safe. I will safely keep my people safe. I will put safety first in everything I do, and I will safely do so with Grainger. When you think safety, think Grainger. Grainger's got over 100,000 safety products to help keep our facility safe and our people safer. When it comes to safety, Grainger's got your back. Call clickgrainger.com/safety or stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Do you owe $10,000 or more on at least two federal student loans? Then you may qualify for new programs offered by the Department of Education. These programs can reduce your interest, lower your payments, and possibly qualify you for loan forgiveness. If you have $10,000 or more and at least two federal student loans and currently not in school, you may qualify for one of these programs. Call now to check your eligibility. Student loan advisors are standing by to help you determine if you qualify for these new programs. They can help you reduce your interest, lower your payment, and even forgive a portion of your student loan debt. Take control of your financial future. Make this free 5-minute free call now to Nationwide Student Loans and learn how you can reduce your student loan debt.
800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588.
Are you struggling with addiction or alcohol problems? If you're depressed, drinking, and using drugs, you may need help. And the Affordable Care Act guarantees coverage of substance abuse.
I knew I could get myself out of this. I just needed some hope and some help.
I took the first step to recovery when I made the call.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
I feel like I'm losing control. I'm afraid I'll lose my job or even my family.
Call now for hope and help with proven, gentle recovery programs.
I never thought that I could be somebody who didn't drink and use drugs.
I'm in recovery, getting the help I need.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-721-6723. 800-721-6723. 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
Have you heard? Proactive Plus is faster and better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin? Acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal, and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited time offer. Give us a call at 800-726-1031 because we're going to let a million people try Proactive Plus risk-free and get two free gifts and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactive Plus now, and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactive Plus, two free extras, and free shipping. Call 800-726-1031. This is our exclusive radio offer, never on TV. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactive Plus with free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Don't wait. Call 800-726-1031. That's 800-726-1031.
BizTalkRadio.com.
You're locked into Money Matters Radio, 1120 AM WBNW.
Hi, this is Wayne Rogers. You see me every week on the Fox channel talking about business, and somebody who's as good as I am, if not better, Stu Taylor. Listen to his Business Talk Radio Network.
All right, we're back, and here's a book that won't put you to sleep. Not only is it beautifully written with great information, but it is physically, when you pick this book up, it is one of the more attractive books you'll ever look at. I'll have Jonah, our guest, explain it. The book is Invisible Influence, The Hidden Forces That Shape Behavior. He's the author of the New York Times bestseller, Contagious, Why Things Catch On. Jonah is a marketing professor at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania, and he's published many, many articles, and you can see some of his work in the New York Times Science and the Harvard Business Review. The book is published by Simon & Schuster, and congratulations on your book. Pleasure to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me.
There's a saying, never judge a book by its cover, but this cover is so clever, I'd like you to explain it rather than have me do it, and then we'll get to more substance.
I think a great cover definitely gets your attention, but it also should describe what's in the book. It almost should act like a Trojan horse, a story that carries the message in the book. And in this case, the book's all about influence without us realizing it. Others are affecting our behavior without us seeing it. So we wanted to build a cover that did just that, that showed people that influence is often invisible. So you look at it one way, you see the main title, but you have to look at it another way to see the hidden title behind it.
Yeah, I mean, very well explained, and that's what it's about. It's a fascinating book on human behavior, and you've been studying it for so many years. You make the claim, I'm trying to say this without bragging, I'm very well aware of my influence on others and how others influence my behavior, but I think one of the basic themes of the book is that most people are unaware of it. I'm not saying I've transcended to a higher level than anyone else. I'm just speaking quite frankly. Can you comment?
Sure. I think we all think we have influence. We have an influence on other people. But the question is, do we realize other people's influence on us? Do we realize how other people are shaping our behavior? I was talking to my father a few years ago. I was mentioning I was doing some research on social influence, and he was lamenting the effect of social influence on his colleagues. He was saying, you know, D.C. lawyers, they're all the same. They make it big. They get their first big partner job, and they all go out and they buy a BMW.
I love this story, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah. And he was saying they're all conformists. And I said, well, Dad, you know, that may be true, but aren't you a D.C. lawyer, and don't you drive a BMW? And he says, yes, but they all drive gray ones, and I drive a blue one. And what I thought was so interesting about that situation was, you know, he saw influence in others, and we often see influence on others. We think we affect others. We see other people driving similar cars or dressing the same way. In fact, when we look around, there's only one place we never seem to see influence, and that is on ourselves. We never seem to think we're influenced. We don't understand the influence others have on our behavior. But more importantly, influence isn't just as simple as doing exactly the same thing as someone else. Often influence is about doing something different or something similar or different at the same time. And so what invisible influence is all about is these often hidden influences and how by understanding them we can live happier and healthier lives.
Yeah, I'd like to make this show apolitical, but I can't resist getting this statement in because I think one of the primary examples, and it almost works back and forth here, Hillary Clinton, it's no secret. When she speaks to a black church, she speaks with an accent. In the Southern church, she speaks with a different one. When she went to the state of West Virginia to kind of contradict what she said about coal miners, coal miner. She talked with a West Virginia drawl. Now, she's obviously trying to influence them, but the influence, in a sense, has worked both ways. Pretty good example?
I think that's a great example. And, you know, it's not just her. Politicians do that all the time.
Not that mimicry. Bad, but go ahead.
It's called mimicry, or almost being a chameleon. And there's lots of great research that shows that this has an important impact on others' behavior. So some researchers, some scientists looked at negotiations, trying to understand what makes some people successful negotiators and others less successful. And they found that one simple trick led negotiators to be about five times as successful. And that trick, very simply, was mimicking their peers, imitating or doing the same thing as their peers. So if you're in a tough negotiation, the other person's sitting down, they cross their legs, you do the same. They tilt their head to the side, you do the same. Subtly, not obviously, but subtly mimicking others made negotiators five times successful. Same thing as in a sales context. If you're at a restaurant and you order a Caesar salad with chicken dressing on the side, and the waiter or waitress says, okay, Caesar salad with chicken dressing on the side, they get a 70% higher tip. And so subtly mimicking the mannerisms, the language, the behavior of others facilitates interactions. It makes people trust each other more, like them more, and makes those interactions go better.
Just a couple of other examples here, perhaps you can comment. I've given a lot of talks, continue to do that, and when I do, when I sense that perhaps I'm losing the audience, I may modify a speech based on the audience reaction so that I can connect with them in a much more favorable way. Another thing, and I think this, it's not instinctive with a lot of people, and this isn't meant as a condescending remark. If I'm talking to a waitress 1 minute and a CEO of a major corporation the next, the tone isn't going to be the same. The inflect isn't going to be the same because I want my influence to form a connection.
Certainly. I mean, you know, imagine you and I are talking and we find that we went to the same high school or we have the same birthday in common. We'd feel a kinship, right? We'd feel like we're part of the same tribe or somehow we're more similar than we thought. We'd trust each other a little more. We'd like each other a little more. We'd be more likely to get along. It's not just in business context. I mean, this same chameleon effect or this idea of mimicry happens in all sorts of situations. Daters, for example, whose language mimic one another more. So two people on a date and their language has more in common versus less in common, they're more likely to go on a second date. And relationship partners whose language tends to match, well, they seem to have longer relationships. And so it's really about how similar we feel we are to others, how connected that can make us feel, and as a result, those interactions go better.
You talk in this book, you've done a lot of research. You've got also some entertaining stories in there, and it's always nice to bring light and humor and entertainment to something that maybe seems pedantic in nature, although I see this as more of a fascinating book than one of those college textbooks you pick up and you're either asleep or confused within the first 5 minutes. Have you got a couple of entertaining stories that you could relate that demonstrates what you talk about?
Sure. I mean, one interesting study we did a few years ago was looking at the effect others have on motivation. So what motivates people to work harder versus less hard, whether we're trying to lose weight or exercise more at home, or maybe at the office we're trying to motivate employees, get them to put in some extra hours or push a little harder on a project we need to complete. And so we looked at this in NBA basketball teams, and we looked at tens of thousands of both NBA and college games to look at how the score at halftime related to the score at the end of the game. Not surprisingly, teams that are ahead at halftime, well, they're more likely to win. So if you were a betting man or woman, you should bet on the team that's ahead. Every 2 points more a team is ahead, they're about 8% more likely to win the game. All that makes sense. There's one place, though, that losing was actually a good thing, and that is losing by just a little bit at halftime made teams actually more likely to win. Teams that were behind by just a little bit, they got fired up. They worked harder. They came out of the locker room. They pushed right at the beginning of that second half. They closed the gap, and they were more likely to win the game. And it's not just basketball teams. A company called O-Power has done a great job using social comparisons to motivate people to save energy. We all get those energy bills in the mail that say, you know, you've used X amount of kilowatt hours per month of energy, and we have no idea what it means. 2,000, 3,000, is that a lot or that a little? All this company did was they added information about others to our bill. So rather than just seeing our own usage, we also get information about others' usage as well. So here's a house in your neighborhood. They're similar size to yours. They've used X kilowatt hours per month. Seeing that information makes people much more likely to save energy themselves, because comparing ourselves to others is a powerful motivating force. Having a sense of what we're doing, we don't know if it's a lot or a little, but if it's a lot or a little compared to someone else, we know if we're doing well or badly, and we get more or less motivated as a result.
I'm looking at your good-looking picture of the jacket of the book. No beard, no mustache, no shaved head, probably no tattoos. People are striving. This is one of my pet peeves. I mean, I enjoy it more than I'm critical of it, I guess. Everybody thinks they're going to achieve uniqueness, and by doing so, we see a copycat syndrome. Young people, beards, the hat on backwards, ponytails, earrings, shaved heads, tattoos. What is their objective here? Is it to achieve a uniqueness and to stand out, or is it to be like everybody else with whom they identify?
What's so interesting about the notion of a nonconformist, or the notion that we're unique, is that sometimes nonconformists are actually just conforming to a different norm.
All right, I'm going to have you pick up on that after a break. Not giving you enough time to answer. With Jonah Berg and a terrific book. Oh man, I love books like this. Invisible Influence.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, and we have great rates for smokers too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
To get your free inventor's information, call 1-800-351-1453. That's 1-800-351-1453. Again, 1-800-351-1453.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to a $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
BizTalkRadio.com.
Morning 6 to 8 on WBNW, 1120 AM.
Hey, this is Dan Harris, co-anchor of Nightline and author of a new book called 10% Happier. I just did a great interview with Sue Taylor, and it's amazing to have places in the media these days so dominated by short sound bites to be able to have long, interesting, intelligent, probing conversations with a smart interviewer. I'm glad I did it, and I definitely do it again.
I want to give you the website of my guest who has rejoined us. Oh, I love this book. I really do. Invisible Influence, The Hidden Forces That Shape Behavior. His website is jonahberger.com, J-O-N-A-H-B-E-R-G-E-R.com. He is the author of this terrific book, Invisible Influence, and I'm recommending it for everyone. I'm not going to ask a redundant question for whom the book is for. I don't think I gave you adequate time, Jonah, to answer the question that I talked about with people looking to emulate whether they want to follow the pack or branch out and achieve a uniqueness they don't think anyone else has, and I referred to beards and tattoos and all that, and I don't believe I gave you enough time to respond.
No problem. And you know, it's not just beards and tattoos. Whether it's corporate culture in America or hipster culture in America, there's this notion that being unique is really good. It's all about standing out. Everybody wants to be different, or at least see themselves as different from others. But if you actually look at it, often the people that say that they're different are actually very similar to other people in their in-group. You know, someone once said in a nice, very nice quote, they said, you know, you can't be a nonconformist if you don't drink coffee. That's sort of how it often is. You know, people end up being very similar. There may be hipsters, folks that have tattoos and beards, but they're not completely different than everybody else. Their friends tend to have tattoos and beards as well. So, you know, we're often similar and different at the same time. We like to fit in. We don't want to be the only one doing something. Yet at the same time, if we feel too similar, that's not good either. And so we like to be somewhere in between, what's called optimally distinct or similar but different at the same time.
Yeah, and there's always this tug of war in terms of influence that people are either looking to exert or avoid having it cast upon them. And I think it's more a matter of personality and than it is intellect, and more of understanding what your direction in life is. But I'll mention the subject of mavericks, troubleshooters who kind of go off on their own and in a positive sense. I think of Steve Jobs. I think of a friend of mine, Tom Peters, management guru. And hey, how about Donald Trump? You know, I hate to get back to politics, but my goodness, how do you define influence with regard to their relationships and the model?
You know, in American culture, we love to see ourselves as mavericks. There's sort of this myth of the nonconformist, that the reason that people succeed is because they're so different. But take a look at Apple. It's a great example. You know, a company that even as their motto for a while was think different. But Apple wasn't the first company to come out with products or services in the domains they were successful. Same with Google. You know, Google wasn't the first company to come up with online search. It wasn't even the second or the third. Apple wasn't the first company to come up with an MP3 player or something like it. They did it better than some other companies had done previously, but they certainly weren't the first. And so it ends up being almost a little bit like Goldilocks, if you think about it. You know, too different actually can be scary. If a product or an idea is too different, people aren't sure how they could use it. Think about, you know, the Segway, for example, a great example from a number of years ago. You know, that thing was supposed to revolutionize transportation forever, but people couldn't figure out how to use it, what it was for, and how it would fit in their lives. So they didn't really adopt it. So if something's too different, people are scared of it. They avoid it. If something's too similar, well, then what's the reason to change our behavior? A new product or service is exactly the same as what's out there already. Why switch? But in between is just right, and that's where Goldilocks comes in. You know, not too hot, not too cold, just right within the middle. Same thing here. Things that are optimally distinct, products or services that are optimally distinct, have that feeling of similarity, making them feel more familiar and we like them more, but are different enough to make them feel novel and worth adopting.
A lot of this is understanding thyself. You talk about, and I want to pick this out because I just thought this was brilliant. You have a fascinating experience in your book about cockroaches and the effects that their behavior had when they had an audience and how you can relate it to people. I mean, I certainly think about it and on a semi-conscious basis because I'm so egomaniacal. I'm not really. I always feel I'm aware of what's going on. But if I'm speaking to a huge crowd of thousands, I notice that it's influenced my behavior to even motivate me more than if I speak with a small crowd. And one of the tricks is to always maintain that mindset, that decorum. Talk about that cockroach experiment. I just love it.
No, I'm glad to hear it. It's a fascinating experiment. So, you know, we talked a little bit about how comparing ourselves with others affects motivation, knowing you're ahead or behind someone else. But could the mere presence of other people actually, as you're talking about, you know, the mere fact that others are around change how we behave? And so there's some research that suggests yes. So cyclists, for example, that were biking around a track, they raced 20 to 30 seconds faster per mile if they were being watched rather than not being watched. Or students, for example, traced a maze faster when other people were watching them compared to when they were alone. So the mere fact that others were present made us do things better and faster than we would otherwise. Yet, there seem like examples that are just the opposite. We've ever tried parallel parking, for example, when someone else is in the car. Somehow parallel parking becomes more difficult when someone else is there. Right? Suddenly we turn into a terrible parallel parker. What happened? Well, so some scientists were interested in that. When do others' presence help us, and when does it hurt us? And they looked, as you mentioned, in one of the unlikeliest places ever, which was cockroaches. So they actually built a little cockroach raceway, a place where they could time how fast it took cockroaches to run down a track. So they'd turn a light on, the cockroaches run into a hiding place, and they'd time how fast it took it to run down that stretch of track. But they also created a cockroach stand, almost an audience for cockroaches to watch. So not of people, but of cockroaches. So imagine little cockroaches watching other cockroaches run this race or scurrying around nearby. And it turned out that cockroaches ran faster when other cockroaches were present. So the mere fact there were other cockroaches around made that cockroach run faster straight down the path. But they actually tried a different maze as well, not just a straightaway, so like running straight, but imagine you have to run straight and then turn right or left before you're done. Well, it turned out when cockroaches had to turn right or left and then run almost in a T, then others' presence made them run slower. And that same idea has been found again and again. For things that are simple, that are easy, like running straight or doing something that's easy for us, like tying our shoes, for example, well, then having others around makes us do it faster and better.
All right, I've got to cut you off because we're just about out of time, but it just reminds me of Hull's gold gradient hypothesis that I learned in college. the closer the mat, the rat gets to the goal, to the goal, which is to get cheese, the faster he runs. Not exactly related to this, but by the book, Invisible Influence, The Hidden Forces That Shape Behavior, a random comment I made. Jonah Berger is the author. Jonah, thanks so much. Stay on as we close out. Have a great day. This is Stu Taylor.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. BizTalkRadio.com.